Hello, it's Dylan. And today is Earth Day. Happy Earth Day, everybody. And actually, Friday is Arbor Day. And so we figured, what better thing to do than spend this week celebrating the world's incredible and wondrous trees. We love trees here at Atlas Obscura, and we're going to bring you a bunch of stories about them. We're going to have stories about a disgruntled plant explorer, about a strange Australian phenomenon involving people emailing trees, and we're even going to branch out a little bit. We're going to talk about killer trees, the dark side of trees, with none other than writer Mary Roach. There's a lot to look forward to during this week. Here's today's episode.
The most important part of tasting is smelling. So before you put anything in your mouth, you want to just see how close each citrus has to get to your nose before you can smell it.
This is Mandy Naglich. Mandy is a professional taster, and she's the author of the book How to Taste.
I never smell my citrus before I eat it.
You got to smell everything first. It's so important. That's why I'm like the anti-lid club. If you're ever having coffee, you got to take the lid off so you can smell it before you taste it. So important.
Recently, Mandy and I met up on a Zoom call to do a little bit of a joint taste test. We had lemons and clementines set out in front of us and a mission to taste them carefully.
Yeah, what should we eat first?
I feel like clementine might be a little more subtle, so I'm gonna go for that one first. You can see like the thinner peel going on. There's less protection of the acid inside.
Yeah. Always delicious.
Definitely. You get a little of that pucker in the back. Do you have that at all? It's like a little tart, but nothing. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's so nice. I eat these by the like millions. I eat them. I eat so many of them. All right, now let's do the lemon.
Let's hit the lemon. So I'm right. Yeah, this is probably a Lisbon lemon. You can tell the thick peel going on.
I didn't know that was the name of it. I just think of it as like the standard lemon.
Yeah, a grocery store lemon's always going to be a Eureka lemon or a Lisbon lemon, pretty much.
Okay.
It's not too bad, though.
I like the lemon.
Fresh. Yeah, yeah. I thought it was going to be like, you know, when you get that really harsh, like almost painful pucker, but it's pretty nice.
Well, as you can tell, we're going to be talking about citrus, and we're going to be talking about one particular citrus that is, in a weird way, kind of a combination of these two.
Yeah, we're talking about a fruit today that kind of falls right between these two fruits, and it's the Meyer lemon, which is a little bit hard to find when it's off season in grocery stores, as we've discovered. So we're doing the next best thing. I guess we could try to put a little bit of each fruit into our mouth at the same time and see if we're creating that Meyer lemon experience. I think it would be like 2/3 lemon, 1/3 mandarin to get the actual taste, or try to recreate the taste.
I'm going to stack a clementine slice on my lemon and then like bite the whole thing.
There you go.
This may or may not work. It's pretty good, actually.
You get a little of that balancing, right? The mandarin or the clementine kind of balances some of the tartness, but it's actually a pretty good approximation of the
that's nice.
What would go on. Yeah.
I got to get my hands on some Meyer lemons. This is delicious. Yeah. I am Dylan Thuris, and this is Atlas Obscura, a celebration of the world's strange, incredible, and wondrous places. Mandy is not just a professional taster, but also an expert on the history of the Meyer lemon. Mandy wrote this incredible story for Atlas Obscura about the Meyer lemon, and so we are going to do a deep dive into the lemon, the eccentric plant explorer who discovered it, and accidentally released this seemingly unstoppable virus causing this very real mid-century citrus panic. That is all after this. I'm going to put my lemons and I'm going to put these on the floor. Otherwise, I'm 100% going to knock them over.
Yeah.
When was the last time I took a road trip? How many national parks could I hit in 2 weeks? What about hotels? Wait, hey, Erica, how much am I spending on travel?
When your questions about life turn into questions about money, there's Erica, the virtual financial assistant to help you spend, save, and plan smarter. Only from Bank of America. What would you like the power to do? Erica is only available in the English language. You must download the latest version of the mobile banking app, only available on select mobile devices. Your chat may be recorded and monitored for quality assurance. Message and data rates and additional terms may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
If you're looking for a place where the wide open skies and the towering mountains inspire you to find an untapped part of yourself, you might want to take a trip to Wyoming. It's a place where bold, curious spirits forge their own way on all types of adventures. There is no shortage of iconic, expansive landscapes out there. You can discover breathtaking hikes, stunning state parks, authentic Western culture, and other historic sites, along with the tales of famous outlaws like Butch Cassidy and pioneers like Buffalo Bill Cody. The truth lies west. Discover yours at travelwyoming.com.
Maybe we should talk about the reputation of the Meyer lemon. It sort of has this aura of like specialness about it. You see it very clearly called out on menus. Like if you're using a Meyer lemon, no one ever just says lemon. They're like, oh, it's this, we're going Meyer lemons. Why does it have that kind of like specialness to it?
Two things make it really special. One is the very, very thin peel. So you, as a grocery store lemon, you might see that big white pith around the citrus, separating it from the rind, kind of the zest of the lemon.
Yeah.
Meyer lemon doesn't really have that separation, so you don't have all that bitterness in there. You have that really fresh, beautiful zest that has this special kind of rose floral notes that typical grocery store lemons don't have. And then you get right into the flesh of the lemon. So if you really wanted to, you could just bite into a Meyer lemon right through the peel, and especially if it's not waxed.
Is this a thing you've done? Are you just like walking around eating Meyer lemons like apples? Just like
I have done it, yes. And it's great. Yeah, that's why you can do it on a tart too, if you want to like preserve it. You just don't have all that bitterness of the pith. And then the flesh is also just a little bit sweeter, a little bit less less tart.
Listener, you may have noted that we were not taste testing a Meyer lemon, because despite our producer Amanda's most rigorous efforts to find and source Meyer lemons near us on the East Coast, it was effectively impossible. Why are they so hard to find?
So during very narrow seasons, you can sometimes find them here in New York. But because of that really thin peel, they're very easy to damage and bruise. And yeah, they'll get those big ugly bruises. And we know, there's one thing we know about grocery stores, it's that they're not going to be selling a bruised fruit. So it's not always worth it for them to bring them out here. And they can be a lot more expensive too.
But there's something else unusual about the Meyer lemon. Unlike the other fruits and vegetables in the grocery store, it's named after a guy, Frank Meyer. I went through a period where I was like pretty obsessed with Frank Meyer. He's like this classic adventurer type. He's always wearing this gigantic fur hat, big boots. And in the early 1900s, Frank worked for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the USDA. And he had a very unusual gig there.
I mean, Frank Meyer, I think, has the coolest job title I've come across in research in a long time, which they just called him Plant Explorer, Frank Meyer. But basically, he was sent out to bring new fruits, vegetables, citrus, plants from Asia to America. He would go on these long trips where he'd be collecting samples, collecting seeds. He cataloged, I think it was over 2,500 different new species that we weren't aware of in the U.S., brought back things like different kinds of pears, all different kinds of citrus. He traveled the world cataloging plants, sending back. His notebooks are amazing to read.
Frank was, of course, not really discovering these plants. They were very well known all over Asia. But what he was doing was finding them and introducing them to the United States. And the lemon that would later be named after him, that he first came across in the summer of 1908.
It was just outside of Beijing. He said that it was an incredible lemon, that it was sweeter, it was something better. It was in a lot of homes there in China. And those were the letters that he wrote back to the USDA before he was able to send seeds and samples. So definitely knew that it was something special, but he was discovering a lot of special things at the time. So I don't know that he knew how long its legacy would be.
He also seemed like this, just like personally, like this kind of complex, romantic, sometimes kind of dark character.
A lot of his notebooks are public knowledge. You know, they're all published on the USDA website. And you can really track his moods through these letters. You know, he's talking about things like pears and berries and things like that, but he's also talking about his loneliness, or that he thinks the locals in certain towns don't like him and other towns they do. Some people are very helpful to him, helping him collect things, helping him ship things. Other people are kind of trying to push him out of their area. Some people are fascinated by him. Some people are a little afraid of him. And he takes all of that feedback emotionally very, very personally, and definitely writes about plants the same way he writes about his emotions. And toward the end of his travels, you can start to see, some loneliness, I'm not going to diagnose anyone, but like kind of depressive thoughts crawling in about what his work's doing. Does anyone care what he's doing? Things like that. He kind of is writing letters home at the time that he's feeling there's tensions in China. He's feeling unwelcome. He's going to these small towns. What we see in the notes are, these things leading up to him being very lonely, not feeling like he has a fulfilling life projection anymore.
To give you an idea of his mindset, I want to read you just a portion of one letter that he sent to his boss at the USDA. It's dated May 18th, 1918, and he mentions passing through these villages that have burned down, how they were having difficulties getting food. And then he writes this somewhat mysterious, kind of quasi-nihilistic passage. He writes, "It often seems that we do not live ourselves any longer, but that we are being lived. Uncontrollable forces seem to be at work among humanity, and final results, or possibly purposes, are not being revealed as yet. That is, for so far as I can look into this whole titanic cataclysm." In fact, that letter turns out to be his last.
There's reports of him falling off a boat. Officially in the USDA, like, the government reports are that it was like a boating accident. And then, he kind of washes up somewhere along a river. It's very mysterious, sad, kind of loose end hanging out there that, something happened. No one really knows exactly what.
Meyer himself dies in 1918, but the lemon lives on. And then by the 1930s, it seems like it's sort of starting to really spread, you know, especially across California. Is that kind of the right timeline of this?
Yeah, if you look up the, like, newspaper ads and things like that, it's pretty fun. There's giveaways of, like, get a free Meyer lemon tree when you buy something in the spring. California starts planting Meyer lemon trees on their medians in between, like, streets and things like that, because they're beautiful, they grow pretty well. Yeah, they're trying to make it this California citrus thing. So it's really, it's fun to look through some of those old newspapers and just see lemon recipes, free lemon trees, how to take care of your lemon trees. There's a lot of columns like that. And then, California actively planting their own Meyer lemon trees in public spaces.
But there is a real problem about that. There is a kind of ticking time bomb inside of these lemons. So what is this citrus plant hiding?
It's a non-symptomatic carrier of quick decline citrus disease. It can act in days and just absolutely decimates other citrus plants. So there was huge blight happening in California citrus, and they couldn't figure out what was going wrong. You know, just orange groves just absolutely declining to quick decline disease in days, weeks. Where is this disease coming from? And it's in every Californian's backyard or living room in these non-symptomatic Meyer lemon trees.
Right. They end up being the, like, perfect stealth agent of death, because they look healthy and well, and they're being planted all over the place. But then their disease is carried. It's, like, spread by like, aphids or something?
Yeah, the bugs that carry it. And Asian citrus in China had built up resistance to it, and it was fine. But when it got into our American citrus, especially oranges, was the big issue. The aphids would get on the plants, and just immediately they'd be declining, and within days, trees would be dead.
How big a deal was this? Like, how worried were people?
It was a big enough deal that it was the first ever international gathering of citrus scientists and experts to try to fight this. It was the reason the International Organization of Citrus Virologists was created, that still exists, trying to come up with a multi-pronged plan, both of how to save American citrus, but also protect other countries, because the Meyer lemon was making its way down to South America. There was reports in Africa of the same things happening. So they wanted to get an international group together to figure out how far this had gone and how they could prevent it.
It got quite intense. Like, the U.S. government got involved. It's like they start these big programs. What were some of the things they were doing to try and take, like, get rid of this Meyer lemon that they had now spread all over the place?
They were literally sending people to knock on doors and if they saw Meyer lemon trees and say, we're coming back next week, and if that tree is still here, like, we're going to forcibly take it and things like that. So, yeah, there was a lot of, on one hand, the scientists were working like crazy to try to breed this gene out of Meyer lemons. And then on the ground, they were enlisting police forces, people from City Hall, tell on your neighbors if you see a Meyer lemon tree. They were obviously digging up all those public Meyer lemon trees and really, yeah, going out of their way to get them out of their counties. And of course, when anything like that happens and someone's knocking on your door trying to take your lemon tree, all of a sudden there's another faction that rises up that's like, my rights, my lemon tree, my backyard kind of thing. So some of the like little City Hall debates that were published in newspapers are, it's just insane the way that people want to defend their rights to poison local trees, I guess.
It wasn't until 1976 that scientists at the University of California, Riverside came up with an answer, an alternative.
They bred a new Meyer lemon tree called the improved Meyer lemon. Like, if you're looking to buy a citrus tree online, you'll notice that they're all called improved Meyer lemon. You can't purchase the original genetics of a Meyer lemon anywhere in the U.S.
I'm curious about you. How did you get interested in the story of the Meyer lemon? Why did you want to know more about it?
Yeah, so I traveled through the many layers of the Cicerone certification program, which is basically sommelier, but for beer. Mm. And to get to Master Cicerone, you have to be able to identify 32 different compounds just by scent and taste. So they're different off flavors in beer. So you have to go through really a whole certification process to learn these flavors, be able to blind identify them. I was a longtime Meyer lemon lover, and I was hoping when I was doing research for my book, How to Taste, there was like some chemical compound in the Meyer lemon that was what made it so different from a standard lemon. Mm. So I was looking through all the scientific papers, and all you can find is like scientific papers about how to eradicate Meyer lemons, how they're full of disease, how to get them out of the country. So I never found the compound. It does just seem to be a different balance of compounds.
So there is no quick, easy chemical shortcut to get that perfect, not too tart, slightly floral, complex Meyer lemon taste. But luckily, if you can't find them at the grocery store near you, Mandy says you can definitely try growing them on your own. That is how they got popular initially.
They're pretty resilient. They're much better than something like a lime tree, or a lot of people try to grow yuzu as well at home. Riverside actually has a list that they recommend of places that are not going to sell you an almost dead tree. Because that's the big problem, is not that they'll give you, you know, any citrus disease, but just that they're not well taken care of before they end up in your home, and you'll never get a lemon from them.
Mandy Naglich is the author of How to Taste, A Guide to Discovering Flavor and Savoring Life. She is also a certified taster and award-winning home brewer. Thanks, Mandy. As a terrible home brewer, I'm very impressed. I've like done it 3 times. Like, it was fine, but no one's writing to anybody about the things that I brewed.
Thank you for having me. It's always fun to talk about Frank and his many adventures.
Our podcast is a co-production of Atlas Obscura and Stitcher Studios. This episode was produced by
Amanda McGowan,
Julia Russo.
The production team includes
Doug Baldinger,
Chris Naka,
Camille Stanley,
Manolo Morales,
Baudelaire,
Gabby Gladney,
Johanna Mayer.
Our technical director is
Casey Holford.
This episode was mixed by
Luce Fleming.
If you want to learn more, be sure to visit atlasobscura.com. There's a link in our episode description. And our theme and end credit music is by Sam Tyndall. I'm Dylan Thuris, wishing you all the wonder in the world. I will see you next time. The world isn't wide enough for those with an insatiable desire for discovery.
The all-new 2024 Lincoln Nautilus Hybrid SUV offers the power and freedom to explore further and deeper than ever before. Intuitive, smart features ensure that you're always connected to the road ahead. Inside, a thoughtfully designed cabin immerses you in a universe that is all your own. The larger-than-life panoramic display spans the entire width of the cabin. It's customizable and interactive. Drivers can even personalize their backgrounds with a series of nature-inspired themes. This vehicle signals the arrival of an exciting new chapter for Lincoln. Discover more about the 2024 Lincoln Nautilus at Lincoln.com.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.